Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you liked Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Slumber party, parade candy, new box of crayons, and a picnic basket. Now, you're probably wondering what all these items have in common. Well, they're all abstract art pieces created by Megan Woodard Johnson, who's currently artist in residence at St. Kate the Arts Hotel. I love those titles.
Thank you.
Megan, was art always part of your life?
It really was. As a little kid, it's sort of the only thing I ever wanted to do. I didn't play sports. I wasn't into dolls. And I was always coloring or just creating things, constructing things. I was always making things.
Did you have any relatives or teachers who encouraged you or inspired you?
I've been very lucky to have a whole family that's encouraged me and a lot of very creative people in my family. So a lot of support there. And then incredible teachers all the way through, from middle school on. And even beyond my schooling, I was lucky enough to get some private lessons to supplement what I was getting in junior high. And then in high school, I was in basically an AP arts program. And I did some college level courses in the summers. So I've had a whole host of helpers.
Were you always attracted to abstracts?
No. I always loved looking at abstracts, and I've always been very, very moved by them. And my work has always sort of been abstracted versions of reality with some recognizable elements to sort of help with a narrative. Until about 8 years ago, I kind of finally pushed through some barrier that I had and was able to figure out I really wanted to be an abstract artist. And I just kept trying and trying, and I would make paintings that sort of looked fine but didn't say anything to me. And then I finally push through some level of getting everything on the canvas to line up and look a way that moved me emotionally. And that's when I didn't need the referenced images anymore. And I didn't need a narrative or a storytelling aspect. I was able to say everything I wanted to say with just color and mark and composition.
It's interesting that you say you're expressing yourself through color, composition, shapes, sizes. I don't have a creative enough mind to do that. How does that work with you?
I don't even really know. That's such a good question. I think something I'm really interested in life and in just observing how we move through the world is how all of our little tiny moments in a day sort of coalesce to make a life. And then our little moments kind of bump up against other people's when we have conversations and interactions. So I'm always really drawn to those little things. So then for me in my paintings, I tend to bring lots of little marks and big marks and little marks. There's a lot of overlap, like all of that kind of jumble of information together, and then get it to settle into a cohesive and wonderful composition. It just sort of feels like I'm filtering through what I love observing in life into a final painting.
Give me an example. How does that work? I mean, you sit down, you have, a blank canvas?
Sure, sure.
And you're looking at all this white.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when I would get up and leave the room because I wouldn't know where to begin.
We all have that. We all have that. It's like blank canvas syndrome, I think, is pretty common. The first thing I actually do, I've been doing this for a long time, is I start my paintings with a whole layer of collage material glued down to the surface. And in my case, I use pieces of books and maps and ledgers, all sorts of things. These are vintage materials that people really used to navigate the basics of life. So things that they use to teach each other, children's handwriting booklets, a good ledger that has somebody's accounting on it, all these vintage papers. And I lay them down.
Before you move on, how do you acquire those?
I do big sourcing missions at antique malls. So those big antique malls with 100 vendors. And it's a day for me to poke through all the little spots and see if I can find little books or pieces of paper that they always find me there.
You must have a lot of files.
I do. I have like these like baskets in my studio because I need to be able to see what's in there. It can't be like a closed box or a file. It's all these little wire baskets with different media sort of organized in there.
All right. So now you're laying them out. How do you decide which pieces? You must have thousands.
Where? I do.
Yeah. How do you decide where to begin? I mean, do you just close your eyes and grab a piece?
Oh, so a little bit. Like, so that first layer is always kind of neutral colors because it's just, like I said, it's books and ledgers and, you know, handwritten paper and things like that. A lot of that, where I make the choices in what to use, is happening when I source it. So in the antique mall, if I decide this book is great, then I just cut those pages into sort of smaller squares and rectangles. And then laying them out to cover the surface is actually, I'm not trying to make a composition at that point. I'm not making really aesthetic decisions at that point. I'm just covering the surface. Because then the next thing I do is start covering all of that with really crazy, bold layers of paint. It's the first layer of many, many layers that make a painting.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I want books and paper materials that were used for teaching, learning, keeping track of daily life. And I generally am aesthetically drawn to materials that were from like the 40s through the 70s.
Megan Woodard Johnson describes the process of taking pieces of paper and paint and creating abstract art.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with abstract artist Megan Woodard Johnson. When you're composing that very first layer, mm-hmm. are you looking for things that relate to one another, or is it just an indiscriminate placement?
It's indiscriminate placement, but it is a very discriminated, intentionally chosen batch of materials that I even start to work with. So when I'm going and I'm picking things, I want books and paper materials that were used for teaching, learning, keeping track of daily life. And I generally am aesthetically drawn to materials that were from like the 40s through the 70s. So in those, I think it's just because I have a personal connection to materials from those eras. There was when I was at my grandma's when I was little and I wanted to color, she would give me papers that were like left over from her secretary job, or just you're always sort of recycling paper before that was even an important thing to do. Or I remember the books that I learned to perfect my handwriting with, or learn, you know, my multiplication tables. So there's sort of a personal connection to my everyday life and the sort of building blocks of the basics of our life. That's what draws me to those materials. Then they become the background, or they become like the base layer of these paintings. In the very end of the piece, you don't actually see much of the content from those pages. So while they're important for me to like get my mood going into just appreciating the everyday, and that then lets me loosen up and get the paintings going.
All right. So now you're relaxed.
Yeah, now I'm relaxed.
Now you can focus. And when you start with that color palette, do you have something in mind? Or, again, do you just reach out and oh, it's blue. Let's start here.
Yes. Honestly, I work with multiple pieces going at the same time. So I'll have like six or eight. I work on birch panels, but it's like a canvas, but made of wood.
How big are they?
Anything from like 12 by 12 inches to 30 by 40, 36 by 36. I just recently finished some really big ones, 60 inches. So I have them all going at the same time.
So they're all in your studio?
Yeah.
There's one here, one here, one here.
Well, I work on the wall and I can sort of move them from place to place because of how I get them to hang on the wall. And that's helpful because I can then turn them around mid-process just to keep them flowing. And honestly, yes, often the first colors are just whatever is left on a brush from a previous painting or in my palette from a previous painting. I actually just try to go in initially without any thoughts in mind about a final composition or color palette, and just let like really sometimes very odd and crazy color combinations start filling up the surface. Because what that does is it gives me something to start to respond to with my next or my third or my fourth choices of color. So I'm just building up in a very, we call it intuitive. I intuitively know that if I just sort of unplug a little bit, let the paint start filling up the space, grab a marker or colored pencil and start, you know, making squiggly marks or just getting more and more marks on the piece, then I'll let it sit for a little bit. And when I come back to it, I'll start to see areas of color that I'm interested in, and then I want to explore more intentionally. And then I sort of slow things down and I arrive at a color composition.
Do you have a signature stroke? Something that you always do first when you start a piece?
You know what? I probably do. I remember a gentleman coming into the studio at St. Kate, and I had like four pieces in progress on the wall and a couple of other finished pieces, and he kept finding a similar mark that I was making. It's like just a big swoopy. So when I was little, I got in trouble for coloring on the walls. And I think there's a little part of me, I understand now, I own a house, I don't want coloring on the walls. But I think there's a part of me that just wants that like really free, I'm making a gesture here in the studio, but like a big looping, colorful, scribbly mark is what I would say. I think that people have natural ways that they make marks. A good sort of little exercise to do is if you're, oh, I don't know if you could remember like being in school and taking notes on paper, being on the phone and just sort of you find a pen in your hand and you just start doodling. Mm-hmm. Some of us make like hatch marks and some of us make zigzags and some of us make loopy marks. There's something that your body, your arm, your hand sort of naturally does. So when I'm working, especially in those early layers, I try to let my marks just be almost like just what my body wants to do. And so then they tend to be really big, loose, very scribbly marks. As it evolves and I paint more and more layers and I'm changing the colors and things eventually start to settle into a color palette that I love and a composition that feels like it's starting to settle into, just from all my years of art experience, like a solid, good, powerful composition, then my marks become much, usually smaller or at the very least really intentional, where I'll look at the whole piece and I'll think it needs a little bit of something bright in this corner to draw your eye over here, or it needs a looser big swoop of color over on this side to balance out that side. Then I'm making more careful choices and additions.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
You have to get up close, and there's a lot of reward in looking at my work up close and finding all these sort of details that come when things are layered and layered on top of each other.
Megan Woodard Johnson describes how she finds meaning in her abstract art pieces.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with Megan Woodard Johnson. So now you have your base with the collage.
Mm-hmm.
You've now started to apply swoops of color.
Swoops of color. Sometimes I'll take the painting and lay it down flat and sort of pour paint on that's really liquidy. And then that makes these like puddles of color. So if you spend time looking at a piece, you're going to find brush marks that were made with brushes that are 5 inches wide, puddles of paint that have dried, swoops where I've taken like a little squeegee kind of a thing and scrape away wet paint and it reveals what was underneath of it. Those smaller, more intentional marks are often like a little smudge of oil pastel. Oil pastel is a wonderful drawing medium that is kind of like a crayon, but it's squishier and has an oil base to it. The color is extremely vibrant, but it makes what feels reminiscent of a crayon mark on paper. That sort of, it's not a real smooth mark. It's sort of just bumpy and textury. And then another thing that starts coming in towards the end when I'm bringing a painting to the sort of conclusion is more collage elements. But this time, instead of using the sort of neutral papers from maybe inside of a book, I'll grab really colorful sections of paper from the cover of a book or from advertisements. Again, all from that sort of 40s to 70s era. The papers, the fonts, the ink colors are just really what grab me. So if I want in a painting like a little spot of blue, I could easily do that with a blue paint on a brush. But if I find a really neat piece of paper from the cover of a book, and it's a bright blue, and I cut a little shape out of that and add it to the painting, it just has a different shape. It's a different edge. It's something interesting, as much as a little drawn scribble is interesting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I follow what you're saying. What I'm wondering, though, is the intent to cover every bit of this birch board?
Yes. I do paint from, you know, one edge to the other. I don't have a specific intention to obscure and cover up and hide from you that first layer of collage, but I also am completely happy and fine if it does get covered. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, that first layer of collage, I'm not trying to make sure there's areas of it that don't get covered so that you can read the content from those bits of paper. I want them to just sort of act like a scaffolding under all of the color. And what is neat is that even if their content, like what's printed on those pieces of paper, get covered up, the edges that they create when they've been all glued down to the surface, even when they're all covered up with paint, you still see these like perfectly aligned, straight edges of paper sort of crisscrossing all across the canvas under the paint. And it gives this really nice contrast between the straight edges that those papers provide all across the canvas and the really swooping gestural marks that I make with paint and drawing materials. So it's another thing that you have to get up close, and there's a lot of reward in looking at my work up close and finding all these sort of details that come when things are layered and layered on top of each other.
I would think it must look different to you even when you're working very up close. And then you go to the other side of the room.
Yes.
And maybe you go to the right or you go to the left.
Absolutely.
And what are you looking for when you're doing that, when you're working on a piece?
Right. I think, like, I like to say it's intuitive, but I know that it's years and years and years of intentional study and learning about the rules of composition and the rules of making your eye move around a canvas or a drawing, whatever you're creating. Even in photography, that's important. You want to give your eye places to move and places to rest. So I think that at this point, I work on a painting. I look at it from all different angles. I sometimes will turn them upside down, and it's like I'm having a conversation with it, and it just keeps letting me know whether it's finished or not. And there's this little part of me, if it's not done, that I'm like, all right, I love you a lot, but you're not quite there yet. And I'll just keep looking at it to find what's the last little bit of detail that it needs to make it come together. It feels a little magical by the end.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
They're telling me that they're getting there, or we're having a real hard time, and maybe that painting needs to go have time out for a while. We just get to a place where at the end I'll just think, oh, I love you.
Abstract artist Megan Woodard Johnson tells us she talks to her art.
Now more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with abstract artist Megan Woodard Johnson. Do you view it almost as having a personality of its own?
Absolutely. We have big conversations in the studio. That sounds so weird, but I don't know. I just feel like they're talking to me and I'm talking to them. I don't use my paintings to specifically start out to try to express something, but they just pull lots of joy and lots of curiosity and just this sort of freedom out of me. So then when we're talking, it's just like they're telling me that they're getting there, or we're having a real hard time, and maybe that painting needs to go have a time out for a while because it's just ugly and I can't figure out what to do next. But we just get to a place where at the end I'll just think, oh, I love you. And that's how it feels.
I mean, so, do you ever look at it and think, oh, you're too boring for me?
Yes. And then we just keep going. There are times too when I think there is such beauty in paintings that are minimal and say so much with very, you know, spare marks and colors. And I think I should challenge myself. And I am not a minimalist in my paintings. It just doesn't work. I just keep going and building to get to where I want to do. So sometimes I will have pieces where I think, oh, you're pretty cute, but we've only done one layer. We're not saying enough yet. And it just, it needs to keep building.
What are you trying to say?
I think I'm trying to evoke some emotions that capture a moment or a memory of a moment, kind of a feeling that, boy, it is hard to describe abstract work sometimes, isn't it? In the end, I feel like my work draws forth some feeling from the viewer. For me, I sit with that feeling then, and usually it sort of pulls a memory of my own life that attaches to that feeling. And that's where those titles that you started with come from. So I'll be sitting there. I mean, that painting, Parade Candy, is like a riot of really big reds, but they're like watermelon reds. And then there's some bright yellows, little bits of greens and blues. But it has a ton of movement. And I first thought, okay, this is done. I love you. And then I had to sit with it for a while. And I just felt like it was warm and joyful and a little bit chaotic, but in a really fun way. And then all of a sudden, I just started thinking about times being on the curb of a parade with my kids or myself as a little kid, like waiting for the candy that people threw at you from the floats. And it just felt right. So
the titles come at the end?
Way at the end. Yeah. Sometimes they sit with me in the studio for a while before I come up with the titles. That's mostly the case. And again, I think it's because I let the paintings sort of lead themselves. When they're done, then I have to figure out what they're saying. One major exception to that is I did a whole series called New Box of Crayons. It's actually an ongoing series.
How many?
I think I've done about
so far
12 of that one. It's the series is just limited by they're all the same size. And I decided I wanted to try to bring the pieces to a point where they were largely two major colors that were sort of talking in the end. Like there's a lot of little bits of color, but in the end, there's like two dominant colors in the composition. And so that was sort of a little challenge I set myself so that I wasn't doing everything with every single color in the world. And I was thinking about how when I was really little, you know, the best thing in the world was a new box of crayons. And so then all those paintings are titled by like the two dominant crayon colors that they ended up being. So I started out with this idea of boxes of crayons. I don't start out each painting like picking the colors first. I make the painting and then I go look at the box of crayons. And literally, like, I'm pulling out crayons from a 1980s box of 64 crayons and trying to figure out which ones match what I made.
Well, if you're using that box of 64, you've got a lot more in that series you can create.
I do, yeah. Exactly.
And is your goal to use all 64 colors?
Oh, I don't know. I guess my goal is just to keep making those paintings. And, you know, when I run out of colors, then maybe I'm done. I don't know. It's just because I'm not sure what's going to happen when I start the painting.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
Sometimes there's pieces that I feel like are very just warm and happy energy, and other people will think they're darker or they bring together a totally different mood for them, something like a struggle.
Abstract artist Megan Woodard Johnson describes people's reaction to some of her art pieces.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back to our conversation with Megan Woodard Johnson, abstract artist in residence at St. Kate the Arts Hotel. I'm your host, Libby Collins. So you finished it. Now mm-hmm. You feel it's spoken to you. You've created a title.
Right.
And obviously, I mean, you're a professional artist. Mm-hmm. You would like someone to purchase that.
Absolutely.
And to have it in their own home and love it as much as you.
Yeah, exactly.
When you show your paintings, whether it's at an art show or places like St. Kate, mm-hmm. are you surprised sometimes with what some of the people coming in looking at it say they see versus what you thought you were putting together?
Right. I'm not surprised, but it is true that there's so many great reactions, and largely they've all been positive. I mean, that's been the best thing about this year of making art in public, because often as an artist, you're just sort of working in your studio by yourself. And then in my case, I may send work to a gallery and like never actually watch the person who buys them interact with them. Or a couple times a year you do an art show, and so you're there, you know, for a little bit. But this has been this constant flow of just engaging with people over the art. There are a lot of people that come in and say wonderful things like, I love these, but I don't know why. And I love that they're open to the sort of curiosity and just being moved by them, which is so beautiful. And then there are definitely people that come in and want to know, you know, what they're about. And I can talk about that. And then people really do see things. They find shapes that remind them of those sort of narrative elements. Sometimes people just can't seem to believe that I am not intentionally fitting that into the composition. You know, like I didn't intend to make a bird there, but I love that you see it. And it doesn't surprise me. Like we're wired to make sense of things, of what we see. And so we create shapes, we create recognizable images, you know, in our mind when we see something abstract. It's like playing the cloud game where you see a cloud and you say, oh, that looks like a teacup, or that one's shaped like a dragon. We recognize things. So I love that people see things, and it's hopefully okay with them that I didn't plant that there and that I still look at my paintings and I don't see physical objects. I just see emotions.
Do you ever have someone look at something and it's they'll tell you what they see, mm-hmm. and it's so far removed from anything you could have ever conceived?
Yeah, like you know what? Sometimes there's pieces that I feel like are very like warm, happy, sort of just warm and happy energy. And other people will think they're darker, or they bring together a totally different mood for them, something like a struggle. There's a lot of motion in my paintings. The brush marks go every which way, and there's splatters, all sorts of stuff. So it's always interesting to me when colors evoke something different in somebody else than they do for me, where I might have thought, oh, that feels like a cool afternoon, you know, on the patio, and they feel like it's like moving through a dark forest or something like that. But it's all okay with me. It doesn't make me respect their relationship with my art anymore, and it doesn't make me question what I've made.
Some people love abstract art, and I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. But there are other people that don't like it at all.
True.
They want their landscape. Mm-hmm. They want the beautiful flowers that Monet like and things like
right.
that. Do you find that people's taste has a lot to do with their individual personalities?
Oh, my goodness. I love that question. I mean, I think it must. I just love anytime anybody loves art. That's really the thing for me, is that you don't have to love or buy my paintings, but go find something that makes you just connect with something outside of yourself, or bring you to a place of memory or a place of joy that, you know, feels good to be around. So I don't have any quarrels with anybody that doesn't love my art or loves something else better. I just think that's wonderful, because it means there's art happening and, you know, people are falling in love with it.
And a lot of people have fallen in love with your art. You're mm-hmm. becoming more and more popular.
Thank you.
A lot of people want to collect it. Have you ever looked around and said, oh, wait, that other artist is trying to imitate me?
Oh, not so much. I think you can see a lot of, you know, similarities in a lot of different art across the board. We're all inspired. We can be inspired by one another, or we're inspired by similar life moments or points of inspiration. I think a lot of times when we're first starting out in making our art and finding our voice, we can reach for maybe visual aesthetics or mark-making tendencies that we see other artists doing. But we grow out of that as we grow into our own voice. So that's like the larger answer. I honestly don't think that I've ever seen anybody's work that I think, okay, wait a minute, that is mine. If I see something that feels a little familiar, I just sort of assume that that person is still growing into their own voice, and that's okay.
You have certainly developed your own technique. Mm-hmm. Do you see that evolving at all, changing, going and using a different sort of technique?
You know, I've been using a very similar technique of the, like, working with vintage papers and all of these different like acrylic paints and the mark making tools that I use for ages and ages and ages. I tend to just keep adding more. Right now, I don't see myself going a full shift. Part of that is just because I've always been an artist that wants to like add more things. So I can't imagine myself, for instance, going a complete switch over to watercolor painting, which is, you know, a really different process. Every once in a while, I think it would be amazing to do sculpture or ceramics or something like that. But I think the thing that those have in common is you're still assembling lots of different materials together to make what you want to make.
Would you still make them in an abstract form?
I think so. But, you know, honestly, a couple months ago, I was thinking that, like, it would be really great to do still lifes again. I don't know. I think I've been an artist for a really long time, and I used to say, oh, I don't think I would ever do X or Y or Z. And now I think I just don't ever want to not be an artist. If something is calling that creative part of me to go explore, I'm going to do it. But I would be really surprised if down the road I wasn't always using multiple types of mediums or materials to make my artwork. Because I've been doing that since I was a kid.
What's the most satisfying thing about creating pieces for other people?
So I feel like that's almost a two-part question. I'm going to answer it selfishly first. The most satisfying thing about creating for me is that when I'm painting and when I'm really in it, everything else falls away. It's like a meditation. It's just pure energy. And there's no, I mean, all the worries of the world or family or anything, like health, anything else just takes a break for a while. And I feel really, really whole and very peaceful when I'm working and very excited. It's all just really good stuff. The most satisfying thing is that if somebody else loves what I made enough to that they want to be around it every day, I mean, that's just the most flattering thing in the world. I can't, it just gives me chills.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
She blew in and just said, I just want to tell you that I walk past this every day and thank you so much for what you're doing.
Abstract artist Megan Woodard Johnson describes her emotional reaction to the best compliment she ever received.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with Megan Woodard Johnson. She's the artist in residence at St. Kate the Arts Hotel. What's the best compliment you've ever received?
I had a woman come into the studio at St. Kate's with tears in her eyes, thanking me for what I do. I don't even know where it came from. It was the shortest. She blew in and just said, I just want to tell you that I walk past this every day and thank you so much for what you're doing. It's beautiful. And I'm so glad you're doing it. And I just thought, I don't know how I'm going to recover from that today. It was, yeah, that has to be the best, right? Like, what could be better than that?
Could you ever see yourself doing anything other than creating art?
So I have done other things other than creating art. For 10 years after college, I worked in project management. I've done event planning. I've done development for nonprofits. I've done lots of different things. What I've learned is that there's lots of things that I can do and lots of things that I can probably be happy doing, but I can't ever not do art as well. So I will always be an artist. Sometimes the being a full-time artist and trying to make a living from this it's exhausting. There's so many parts to it. We've talked a lot about the joy and everything, and this year of being the St. Kate's resident has felt like I've had a benefactor for a year. It's, you know, just been incredible. But there's a whole other side of being an artist for your career, and it's that you're a self-employed person peddling your own your own thing. And you're also doing all your marketing and your sales and your taxes and your everything. And sometimes that is exhausting. So there's sometimes I think I could go back out into the sort of world of doing things for other people, but I don't have any other dreams. My dream would be for sure that this continue to grow and I continue to be able to contribute to my family's, you know, well-being by this, and that I continue to be able to connect with other people this way.
If you were to create a piece of art that would be you, Megan Woodard Johnson, what would it be?
Oh, that's like a therapy question. That's fantastic. You know, I have different parts. Definitely the work that comes out of me in the studio is very me. But also, If you look at my art, it's all color. It's very vibrant. It's super busy. Now, you're sitting in the studio looking at me. I wear monochromatic, almost all black all the time, cool jewelry, but I'm pretty reserved as a, you know, my outward appearance, I guess. I don't know, but I guess I'd like to think that it would just be tons of color and looseness, because that's where I feel like the most me is when I'm making those paintings. So that must be it. It would have a lot of different colors, a lot of different marks, a lot of different layers. But overall, it would feel joyful and exciting and interesting to be around.
Megan Woodard Johnson, you are very interesting to be around. Thanks
Thank
for joining
you.
Us today. We've been talking with abstract artist Megan Woodard Johnson about the process she goes through in acquiring pieces of paper from various rummage sales and how she puts them together with paint to create beautiful compositions of art. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Megan, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.